last case on our calendar is 4-21-12, Cuyahoga County Bar Association versus Stephen Friedman. Mr. Koblenz.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Your Honor, as the chief indicated, my name is Rich Koblenz. I have the honor of appearing before the court today representing Stephen Friedman. I would first point out to the court, as we said in our brief, we are here objecting to the sanction only. We are not objecting to the findings of the violations on the three counts that were found by the Board of Commissioners. We believe that the seminal question really before this honorable court is whether this court's longstanding position relative to bar discipline, which according to your case law dates back to Blackstone in its previous holdings, is to protect the public and not to punish the lawyer as the goal of lawyer discipline. If stare decisis is followed, then a state suspension with probation and monitoring, we believe, is all but mandated for Stephen Friedman. Your Honors, we respectfully submit that the state suspensions meted out in cases such as Disciplinary Counsel versus Market John, which is to be found at 99 Ohio State 3rd, 489, decided in 2003, where an attorney misrepresented contributions to his law firm's retirement plan and filed false federal and state tax returns to cover up his misrepresentation, received a state suspension. Lake County Bar Association versus Azzone, a case was decided by this honorable court last year at 102 Ohio State 3rd, 79, where an attorney was convicted in federal court for failure to file his tax return and was granted a state suspension. And Dayton Bar Association versus Malone, which was a 1999 case to be found at 84 Ohio State 3rd, 403, where the attorney who was convicted criminally of failure to file tax returns was publicly reprimanded, should be looked toward by this honorable court as the appropriate sanction for Steve Friedman. Your Honors, the board found that Steve Friedman's depression and sleep apnea, which date back some 14 years, constituted appropriate mitigation for his actions. They don't excuse his actions, but they do mitigate them. The professional who provided the evidence of that mitigation, Gary Echt, who obviously was found to be credible, also provided evidence that Steve Friedman no longer suffers from the impairments which caused the actions which brought him before the board and now brings him before this honorable court. Under these circumstances.
Counsel,
what
is the current status of his attempts to rectify the tax liability?
Your Honor, it is my understanding that he has filed all but 2 years, and those other 2 years should be filed by the end of the day today.
He's filed for 2 years?
No, all but 2 years, and the last 2 years should be in the mail today by the end of the day.
And that was, how long ago was he contacted by the Bar Association regarding the tax issues?
I believe he brought it to the attention of the Bar Association, by the way, Your Honor. He was not contacted by the Bar. When they asked for that, he told them what the situation was. I believe the original time, Your Honor, was approximately 2 years ago.
So it took him 2 years to get the returns filed?
Yes, Your Honor. There was the problem of trying to put together 12 years worth of records. He had moved his office a number of times. He had, during that period of time that he had neglected to file his tax return, suffered from the problems that the board found were mitigation, and trying to get all that information together was a very, very daunting task. I'm not trying to excuse it, but we believe the mitigation.
What arrangements is he making for payment?
Your Honor, he has talked to the Internal Revenue Service and will be abiding by a payment plan. I don't know how much he'll owe. There's a very good chance he may not owe much. He didn't know when he gave an answer, it was just off the top of his head. Quite frankly, his income has been very modest. So I don't know how much tax he really owes. But he will be entering into a payment plan with the Internal Revenue Service for the payment of those taxes.
Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
You just said his taxes, his last 2 years, will be in the mail today.
I said 2 years of the returns, yes, Your Honor. I don't know if those would constitute the 2003 and 2000.
You're here representing him. You're representing to us that he's mailing them in today, but you don't know what he owes.
Your Honor, he called me last night to tell me that they were in the mail. And you're right, I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't give you, you're not dealing from a position of strength when you tell us things like that.
I absolutely recognize that, Justice Piper. But I would rather deal from a position of weakness than deal from a position of dishonesty, in all honesty, you know, in all candor.
Counsel, does he have any issues other than the filing and then the payment plan with the federal government?
No, Your Honor. He was never, he contacted the federal government. He was never contacted by them. He is not the subject of prosecution. Quite frankly, and I've done some tax defense work, when you go to the government and you tell them that you're entering into a plan and you're trying to work with them, they very rarely turn you over to the Criminal Investigation Division. So it has not been a criminal prosecution.
So are you telling us that he has some kind of assurance from the IRS that this will not be criminally prosecuted for this intentional failure to file?
No, Your Honor, I can't tell you that because the government never gives you that insurance. What the government will tell you is they can neither confirm or deny that they're doing anything. That's the way that the FBI works. That's the way that the IRS criminal works. However, custom and practice is when you come to them and you file, they do not prosecute you. I can't tell you that they've made any sort of assurances.
Is he negotiating with the IRS himself?
Yes, Your Honor.
You're not doing that for him?
Your Honor, I not to be flip, but I went to law school because they said there was no math. I really don't do tax work. I mean, I've done some criminal defense work for failure to file. That's it. I do not do, accountants do my taxes. I did, you know, try to get him the names of some professionals to deal with, but I am not involved as far as filing his taxes are concerned, other than trying to tell him to get them done.
Well, along with, you're asking us to make a big break with the board, as you know, board's recommendation is 1 year suspended, and yours is 1 year suspended stayed, the entire suspension, is that correct, suspension stayed?
That is what our prayer is, Your Honor, that is correct. And yes, Your Honor, we are asking you to break with the board, but we believe that some precedent does hold that out. Additionally, Your Honor, I'd point out that the hard rule has really come out of criminal convictions. I'm not trying to excuse his behavior.
But I want to go to the effect he had on his clients. Mr. Russell got a settlement for malpractice, I guess, but the Bar Association points out, as you know, in their brief, that he got less than half of the value of his property, and Dick Hack went through a repossession of her automobile because of his misconduct. We add those to the failure to file income tax return for pay income taxes for 12 years. It seems to me that staying a suspension would be a pretty light slap on the hands for that kind of conduct, wouldn't it?
Your Honor, I don't agree that a state suspension would be a light slap on the hand. I believe
maybe a heavy slap on the hands, but at least shouldn't he sit out for some time? I mean, he's been detrimental. His conduct's been detrimental to two clients, quite detrimental. And he says to the U.S. government and all of us who pay taxes, I don't have to pay mine. I'm not, you know, heck with you. He gets to continue practicing law. I mean, that's what you're arguing. I've convinced me that we should say that to the bar and the public, that that's, you know, you can, we're gonna warn you, essentially.
Your Honor, I think what you can say to the bar and to the public is that when you've had a lapse, and there's a reason for that lapse, and the reason is suffering from a mental illness, and you've worked through to try to resolve that relative to the taxes.
So-called mild depression, whatever that is, but he was not mentally ill, as we've seen with some of the respondents who come here.
Your Honor, I will admit that it is not the severe type of mental illness that one might contemplate. I would point out relative to the Russell case, I don't know. I see the Bar Association argues about his damage. I don't know how damaged he was. Mr. Russell, and I'm not trying to, you know, jump on top of him, he didn't make his mortgage payments. His property was going to foreclosure. It sold at foreclosure. In addition to getting the money from the foreclosure, he obtained a malpractice judgment or a malpractice settlement. Again, I'm not trying to excuse what Mr. Friedman did, but I really didn't see, quite frankly, the harm that was done to Mr. Russell that would not have been done anyway. I don't know if Mr. Friedman had filed something. Mr. Russell still didn't bring his mortgage current, it still would have wound up going to sale.
Counsel, I might even have the same view you do on that transaction. A question occurs to me about that issue, and that is, what did he agree to do for Mr. Russell? The description that I read is that he agreed to, may have agreed to file pleadings to delay something that Russell had no ability or intention of correcting. It sounded like the client wanted him to buy him some time for refinancing. Well, if you call up the bank or the lawyer for the bank and say, can we get a little time, he hopes to a little more time, because obviously there's, the bank's been hounding the client already. That's one thing, but when you, isn't there a little bit of an issue about filing pleadings that you know have no merit?
Your Honor, I am, Mr. Russell did not appear at the hearing. I've never spoken to Mr. Russell. I have no idea what Mr. Russell's intention was or what instructions he gave to Mr. Friedman.
Well, there's some discussion of that, though, in the findings.
Yes. Your Honor, I would tend to agree with you as far as knowing what a client would do. However, I believe that as an oath we have, it would be appropriate to at least file the answer. And I could certainly see where counsel would file an answer and then try to negotiate.
But your answer would really say, yeah, I'm in default. And
that
I'm
is correct.
Months behind.
That is correct, and say that, and then hope that the client, if the client really does wish to keep the property, either work out a deal to buy it or try to sell it themselves, which I believe common sense would tell us probably would get a better result than would be if it went to a forced sale by the sheriff.
I guess I don't find so much fault with his failure to file an answer, because the answer wasn't going to gain anything, and would, if the answer was filed and created some ruse in an effort to create an unmeritorious or a delay with lack of merit, he's better off for not having filed it. And he wouldn't be the first lawyer that forgot about the date of a foreclosure sale and didn't notify the client. So some of that, I mean, we're dealing with some violations, but we're dealing with a fairly common occurrence, well, not that common, but it does happen, of malpractice at the same time.
I would agree with that, with that take on that, Mr.
Yeah,
Mr.
But Justin. But the, I raised it earlier, and the chief has raised it. We've got some serious explaining to do. If we're not taking him out at all for missing 12 years of filing taxes.
Well, the way I would answer that, Mr. Justice, is simply that each case should be looked at on its own, as this court has repeatedly held in the disciplinary area. This is not a hard and fast area that we look at the individuals who appear before us, and we look at all the good that the lawyers have done in addition to the wrong that they've done.
I mean, certainly his coming forward and self-reporting weighs in his favor, but it's...
Your Honor, I believe that also the mitigation evidence that was presented to the board, to the panel and to the board, also should weigh in his favor. Mr. Friedman has been practicing law since 1976. He's never had a disciplinary problem before, even when he was suffering through the problems that were revealed before the panel and the board.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you a little bit about this diagnosis of mild depression that is situational rather than biochemical. So I'm presuming that counseling was the therapy as opposed to medication.
There,
is that accurate?
My understanding, Your Honor, is, and the evidence I believe was that there was some medication also for a period of time.
Okay, and he's no longer on medication for depression.
My understanding is he is no longer being medicated. However, he is still engaging in counseling.
All right, and he also has an office coach or manager to improve his organizational skills?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. During this whole period of time, and you say that he has not been subject to any other discipline, he kept current on his CLEs?
That is my understanding, Your Honor, yes.
So he had
I'm
the
sure
wherewithal?
He has, because it would have come up if he
right,
had
he had the wherewithal to do that for the decade plus of non-filing his taxes.
That is correct.
All right.
With the period of time I have back, just to address some of the issues that were brought up by the Chief Justice and Justice Pfeiffer, this would certainly not be the only case, in addition to the ones I've cited, where a lawyer did not file tax returns and had other issues, where this court did not actually sit them out. We have the case of the Cleveland Bar versus Smith, which I'm very familiar with since I represented Ms. Smith, where there was a failure to file the tax returns as well as several neglect matters, and there was a state suspension there in the Cuyahoga County Bar versus Lazaro matter. Lawyer took cocaine as a legal fee and did not file his taxes. And this court at that time saw fit to stay in actual suspension. Your Honors, I believe that under all the facts and circumstances involved here, justice would be served by a state suspension, and I believe that the people of the state of Ohio and the lawyers of the state of Ohio would not take that as an open book to go ahead and not pay their taxes or violate the disciplinary rules. I see that I've run over my time. I will obviously don't have my rebuttal left, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kobes. Ms. Medell.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Ellen Mandel, representing the relator Cuyahoga County Bar Association. I would like to mention a few points before I forget them. With respect to this so-called situational depression, Mr. Friedman himself testified he believed that started in 2001, 2002, about the same time as the bar complaints came. Dr. Echt, who is the therapist, did not consult with the physician and took Mr. Friedman's statements to him in diagnosing that the depression had gone back to 1990 or thereabout. But during the same period of time, as the court has noted, he was compliant with his CLE, he was practicing. His own witness, Renee Heller, testified that he was a competent and diligent attorney. He submitted a letter from a client named Lichko, who said that he had known him for 12 years, had entrusted legal matters to him over that 12 years, except for a brief period of time where he felt that his whatever problems he was undergoing would make his legal representation inappropriate at that time, but that now he's back with him. So I'm not buying into the board's finding that the depression dates back to 1990. We didn't object to the factual finding of the panel, but we don't believe that the evidence actually supports that. With respect to the taxes, I would submit that it would have been incumbent upon the respondent to have offered some documentary proof to the relator so that we could have supplemented the record. We have nothing but the respondent's word at this point that he's filed anything. The respondent was contacted in 2002, in about July, by the relator with respect to a certain complaint that was filed with us. And it was the relator who contacted OLAP, who then contacted the respondent. Probable cause was found on the original complaint in December of 2002. The following December of 2003, the parties submitted a consent to discipline, and that included the issue of the unpaid taxes. So at least by December of 2003, the respondent was aware that he had some serious issues to deal with on the tax issue. The panel rejected the consent to discipline precisely because, among other things, the tax issue, and therefore a second amended complaint was filed on January 16, 2004. Between January 16, 2004 and July 8, 2004, when the respondent's deposition was taken, he had done nothing to take care of the tax problem. He testified at deposition that he would gather the documents so that he could reconstruct his income history and file his taxes and produce documents to that effect, but he didn't do it. We get to the hearing in September. He has not done anything. What he did was 9 days before the hearing, he went to the federal building, to the front desk, the reception desk of the Internal Revenue Service. They told him to go to the collections officer, and he never followed through with that phone call. So we have virtually 10 months from the time that he's on notice that the Bar Association is pursuing the tax issue until the hearing, and he's done nothing. And we don't have any proof today that he's done anything. All of the cases that Mr. Koblenz cites are cases in which the respondent attorneys had filed their taxes prior to the disciplinary hearing going forward, had filed taxes, in most cases had paid the taxes or partially paid the tax. In one case, the attorney had paid $118,000 towards the tax liability, but had a substantial amount to go. respondent does not mention is that the law office was a corporation. There are corporate taxes that haven't been filed. There are employment taxes, employee taxes that haven't been filed. We don't know what W-2s were issued. There may be false W-2s, which was the case in the Bruner decision from 2003. In December of 2004, this case decided the Abood grievance, and they issued you issued a one-year stay with 6 months, one-year suspension with 6 months stayed. In that case, there were 8 years of unfiled taxes, most of which had been filed before the hearing, and the respondent had served 14 months of incarceration. So his penalty was effectively 20 months. The penalties that this court has imposed on people who have conducted themselves this way, it's been anything from public reprimand to indefinite suspension. So when the relator made its recommendation, which ultimately was affirmed by the panel and adopted by the board, of a one-year suspension, that took into account the mitigating factors of the depression, such as it was, the fact that this is a nice guy, that this is a guy who's kind of a schlub, and who represents an underrepresented population. I would also note that with respect to the office coach that he was referred to by OLAP, he went to see that office coach one time. So when we get to the hearing, he's seen an office coach one time. He has Dr. X saying that he's completely better, that he's functioning completely well, and yet his taxes aren't paid. He doesn't have the documents put together even to take to an accountant or an attorney or the Internal Revenue Service to try and get them paid, or at least the returns completed. I'm not sure that their testimony is all that credible or that the progress he's made is all that substantial. On that basis alone, we believe that the board adopted the right sanction, and we would ask the court to affirm.
Would you want to comment on Mr. Koblenz's observation about the foreclosure and the fact that he hadn't paid his mortgage payments, and that Mr. Russell hadn't made mortgage payments, and that he may have received, I guess he got a recovery both from malpractice and I guess he got some money from the foreclosure.
He got nothing from the foreclosure because the foreclosure sale resulted in a deficit.
The bank.
The bank got less than actually what the mortgage balance was. So there was no money coming to Mr. Russell from the foreclosure sale, and he netted $22,000 from the malpractice settlement, having had to pay attorney fees for that. I don't know what Mr. Russell's situation is. I do know that he was behind in his mortgage. That's why the foreclosure action was pending. I think there had been some historical relationship between Mr. Russell and the respondent, and that Mr. Russell was frequently behind in his mortgage. I don't know if he was asking the respondent to represent him so that he would have time to refinance, borrow money from family and friends. I have no idea. Sell other property. This was rental property, so he was deriving income from it.
Well, the report, or the finding of the panel, is that that Russell did not ask him to engage in a full-scale representation. He just asked him to buy him some time while he investigated refinancing, and the only activity that he undertook was to get leave to plead, which would have bought a little bit of time. He didn't file a pleading, which apparently would have been bogus, other than if he confessed judgment.
Well, but that's the practice in the foreclosure, unfortunately.
What's that?
The practice in the foreclosure area is that defendants frequently file an answer denying everything, and then the case has to go to summary judgment, and it buys them sometimes 2 years in Cuyahoga County.
But we wouldn't really be applauding that if that's what is...
No, we wouldn't. And in fact, it's my position...
So in reality, what he did wrong here, he was hired to buy some time. He got leave to plead. He didn't file a pleading, which would have been bogus if he had filed it. And he blew the notifying the client of the date of the foreclosure is what he did
wrong.
Well,
that's actually wrong because the client notified him and he blew it because he blew the opportunity to redeem it after the sale. The client kept getting the notices. I mean, that's one thing that we can count on in a foreclosure action when there is an attorney.
And the opportunity to redeem it after the sale would have required the client to come up with a bank that was going to loan the money to.
That's correct. But I have to assume that if he had no basis for claiming that he could have made good on this property, that he wouldn't have had a basis for a malpractice settlement. And his insurance company paid $35,000 to settle the claim. So I think it may have had some merit. But again, I can't know that. And again, do I think that Mr. Russell has been, you know, grievously harmed?
The reason I press you on that is to me, the most troubling part of discipline is when a clear-cut malpractice situation laps over into violations of the discipline code. And the code has to be there, and frequently what is malpractice also ends up being discipline. But I think we always have to be careful about that.
I think so, too. And had this been the only case before us, we would have very likely either not proceeded or proceeded with a recommendation of a public reprimand. Truthfully, if Mr. Russell had come into my office, and I don't do foreclosure work, but if he had come into my office, I would have told him there's nothing that I can do for him. Because I, having been a judicial law clerk, I don't like, you know, the kind of buying time pleadings, and just on an ethical basis, I think it's a waste of the client's money and it's a waste of the court's time. So perhaps that's the advice he ought to have given him. But having undertaken it, he had some obligation to do something, and he didn't do it. And again, if Russell was the only case we were here on, we wouldn't be here. With the DASAC situation, not only did he compound his neglect and his failure to do what he was hired to do, he advised her to hide her asset, the car, which was the reason she wanted to file the bankruptcy in the first place, was so that she could keep the car. He advised her to hide it. He said, if they can't find it, they can't repossess it. And he acknowledged that. To his credit, he acknowledged that he told her to do something dishonest. And the panel and the board correctly found that that was a 1102A4 violation. What runs through all of this is that he knows he's done stuff wrong, and he avoids his clients. He doesn't return their phone calls because he knows that he's done wrong things, and he's embarrassed by it. Not that he's too depressed to call them back. It's that he knows he's done something wrong, and he's too embarrassed to acknowledge it to the client. This so-called, you know, confession comes at the end of a grievance process. It doesn't come, or the end of a malpractice suit in the Russell case. It doesn't come from the respondent. It comes because of the circumstance that's been imposed upon him. And he thanked us on the record, actually, for referring him to OLAP, and we're very glad that we did. But we still believe that this court needs to send a message that not filing your tax returns for 12 years is a violation that's serious enough to warrant some real time off. And we believe that a one-year suspension with the conditions that we stated and that the board adopted for reinstatement be adopted by this court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mandel. Mr. Kobach, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. I would simply like to reiterate the fact that the idea of sending a message, we send messages by bringing these kind of cases. I don't think that the public will be served. Steve Friedman and Ms. Mandel did touch on this, I didn't have the opportunity to, serves a segment of the population that a lot of lawyers don't serve. He has served it admirably, he continues to serve it. I feel that they will be the true losers. It's not just about Mr. Friedman, it's about the people that he serves. Under all the circumstances involved here, in your honors, I believe that appropriately a message is sent by going through this process that it's wrong and that the lawyers of this state recognize that just getting your name in OBAR is bad enough, let alone the idea that you'll be monitored. We believe that justice would be appropriately served, the profession would be served, and more importantly, the public would be served if this court stayed the suspension and placed conditions upon that stay to make certain that Mr. Friedman followed the rules. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Koblentz. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.